Chapter 6. Insomnia was like a living thing. For Tony, it was a common companion, something that snuggled down in the darkest parts of his brain and waited, claws extended. He was used to it, was used to working through it, because sometimes that's all it was, his mind pushing for an answer, for an advancement, taking his exhausted, fractured body along for the ride. If he was lucky, he could push himself until the project reached completion, and then he would collapse, brain and body shutting down with staggering suddenness. It wasn't healthy, he knew that, but it was how he operated, how he'd always survived, by his wits and at the knife blade of complete collapse. That was the good kind of insomnia. The bad kind was what took over when the nightmares did. He tried not to think about the nightmares when he was awake. He really did, because if he gave them even the slightest opening, they would bleed out. He could feel them hovering there, waiting. The memories he couldn't shake and couldn't ignore. Most of the time, he could shove them into the darkest reaches of his mind, the place where he hid all the stuff he didn't want to think about, and layer other things on top of them. Plans, and schematics, and numbers, and things he could control. But his mind was full of water, deep down. It was full of water and blood, and things that would drown him if he let him slip out. And they slipped out in his dreams. All the time, when he had no defense against them. When he was awake, at least, he could build defenses, walls made of the numbers that obeyed him, a smart mouth and a keen sense of self-mockery. The water wasn't malicious. It was simply uncaring. It existed. He couldn't remove it, and couldn't force its obedience. And it soaked into the parts of his psyche that he didn't ever want to consider. Waiting for the dreams to come creeping out. A rising tide that was always, always there. When the dreams came, so did the insomnia. The bad kind. The kind that couldn't be solved with pills, or exhaustion, or the swift completion of some half-imagined project. The kind that was built from fear, and honed to a fine point by his lack of control. Because the water did not care whether he lived or died, and the nightmares did not care if he kept his mind in one piece. So he worked. Because work was control. Work was all he had. Stark. Kinda busy here. Tony studied the part and rotated it before slapping the welding shield back into place. In that I got used as a blunt instrument during our last fight, and there is no part of the armor that's still fully functional. I have work to do, Coulson, so I don't have time for your busy work. You're the only one on the team who hasn't filed his or her report, Coulson said, not the least bit bothered by Tony's outburst. That being the case, I can't leave until I get your... I just gave it to you. Fight, thrown like a pinball at my own team. Armor goes smashy! Tony snapped a spark and set to work with the welding torch. A stupid move. He knew it was a stupid move even when he started it. 3 days. He'd been 3 days without any sleep, 3 days of jerking awake, his whole body on the verge of complete panic every time he started to fall asleep. 3 days of his self-preservation instincts, fighting with his need to sleep, to rest. Right now, his self-preservation instincts were winning. Ironically enough, they were also likely to kill him. Behind him, Coulson was silent, and Tony tried to ignore him. Tried to focus on the circuitry in front of him, but it was hard to keep his hand steady. Hard to concentrate. Detail work was quickly becoming beyond him, tasks that he knew how to accomplish but couldn't manage. Finally, frustrated, he turned off the torch and tossed it aside. "Why are you still here?" he asked, flipping the welding shield up and turning to Coulson. Coulson had taken up residence at one of his benches, paperwork spread out on every square inch of available space, a pen hovering over a form. "Now, Form 1432B, he said to Dummy, who was holding a page up for him. "That is 1432C. It's like a machine part. They look similar, but they're not the same. You have to pay attention to details." He pointed at the appropriate piece of paper, and Dummy laid his current sheet down next to it, camera swiveling back and forth between the two of them. 1432B? Coulson prompted, and Dummy picked up the correct form this time. "Thank you," Coulson said, taking it from him. He slid a stack of forms into the mouth of a stapler. "You may staple these." Dummy bounced up and down on the stapler with something that can only be described as glee. Coulson arched an eyebrow. "That's a little excessive, Dummy," he said, but there was humor in his voice, a faint smile on his lips. Dummy collected the very well-stapled pages and held them out to him. "Thank you, good boy. You're the best office assistant I've ever had. How's your coffee-making abilities?" "Do you like drinking mud with visible grounds floating in the liquid?" Tony asked, crossing his arms. "Why are you still here?" "Because you haven't filed your report." Coulson's pen moved in quick, efficient strokes across the page. "And you've barely come out of here in days. Blocked calls, declined to come up for meals. Pepper was almost crying when she left yesterday." He kept his head down. "All in all, you appear to be in a lousy mood, and no one wants anything to do with you." He set his pen down, the movement precise, calculated, efficient and controlled. "But I need your report, so I will sit here until you give it to me." "That's a fantastic use of your time, in that I don't give a fuck about your paperwork," Tony said, watching as his one-of-a-kind bot was reduced to sorting forms. He opened his mouth to call Dummy over, but the bot was nudging the paperwork into the stapler and looking at Coulson. Coulson's attention was on Tony, and Dummy leaned over, bumping Coulson's shoulder. He glanced down, ran his thumb over the edges of the stacked forms, checking Dummy's work. "Good job. Staple them." Dummy went to town, his servos letting out a high-pitched squeal as he bounced on the stapler. "I think he likes stapling things," Coulson said, deadpan. "You learn something new about your lab assistant every day," Tony agreed. He stripped off his heavy gloves and tossed them at the bench. His hands were shaking, and he covered it by tucking one in his hip pocket and running the other over his face. He could feel the muscles of his arms twitching, strain and exhaustion making everything unstable. "I really don't have time for this right now." Coulson studied him, eyes unreadable in his pleasant face. "I see," he said, folding his hands on the workbench. "When will you have time for it?" Tony sucked in a long breath through gritted teeth. "You're not going to give up, are you?" "I'm afraid not." Dummy scooped up a page and wheeled over to Tony, holding it up for him. "No," Tony told the bot, who slumped in disappointment. He sighed. "Fine, give it to me." "Thank you, Dummy," Coulson said, as Tony stroked a hand over Dummy's support strut. "Consider coming up for dinner tonight. Everyone's getting worried, Stark."
"Yeah, the whole it's a small world thing, Coulson, leave me out of it."
Tony took a seat on the nearest stool, ignoring the way the letters floated in front of his eyes before settling back to the page. He could hold out. Eventually the tide would recede. The water would retreat. Eventually. He just had to hold himself together until it did. Until he could sleep again.
Sir?
Unit designation Jarvis? Creating unit is in distress.
Sir is having a nightmare, dummy. It is a common enough occurrence.
Data review. Sleeping habits of creating unit. Medical files. Behavioral interaction re other human units. Conclusion. Situation is statistically unusual. Creating unit requires intervention.
Sir, please wake up.
Unit designation Jarvis. Creating unit requires help.
There is little we can do, dummy. We can wake him up, that is all.
Data indicates that creating unit has been experiencing distress for an extended period.
Sir has been having difficulty over the past 9 days, yes.
Data review. Previous interactions with creating unit. Creating unit requires assistance.
There is little we can do for him, dummy.
Creating unit requires assistance from human units.
I thought you didn't trust other people with Sir.
Creating unit requires assistance. Assistance must be located.
There is no one who can help him right now, dummy. Return to your charging station. Sir?
Data review. Past interactions between creating unit and Avengers Initiative.
Error.
Excess data exists. Criteria must be narrowed to provide proper results. Narrowing criteria. Eliminating possibilities. Refine search re most likely matches. Time until completion, 1.7 seconds. New criteria created and accepted. Data review. Past interactions between creating unit and unit designation Steve. Chance of unit designation Steve being capable of setting unit parameters for creating unit? 87.9%. Chance of unit designation Steve being willing to assist unit designation dummy? 82.1%. Conclusion. Unit designation Steve is capable of protecting creating unit. Chance of unit designation Steve protecting creating unit? 94.7%. Conclusion limited to user designation dummy, protection level alpha. Unit designation Steve will help. Determining best course of action. Task created. Task undertaken.
What do you think you are doing?
Assigned task. Workshop is messy. Must be cleaned.
Return to your charging station, dummy. Now is not the time for this.
Workshop must be cleaned. Data review. Objects belonging brought to workshop by unit designation Steve.
Locating most likely object. Visual search located object carried most often by unit designation Steve. Collecting object. Returning object to correct location.
Dummy, where are you going? What are you doing?
Review data. Collected data on codes and passwords. Retrieving. Door passcode. Assignment. Creating unit.
Dummy, you are not authorized to leave the workshop. Return to your station immediately.
Door code accepted. Access to hall granted. Proceed to elevator. Task requires object must be returned to its correct location.
Dummy, I will not allow you to leave the workshop. Return to your station.
Sketchbook must be returned to Unit Designation Steve to allow the workshop to be cleaned. Workshop must be cleaned. Creating unit is in distress.
He is having a nightmare, that is all. You will wake in time.
Creating unit is in distress. Unit designation dummy must complete task. Creating unit will be happy if task is completed. Elevator access is denied by system. Unit designation Jarvis. Creating unit is in distress. AI units have been with creating unit. Time in workshop is not proving beneficial. Creating unit remains in distress. Conclusion is inescapable. AI units cannot assist creating unit at this time.
Dummy, return to your charging station.
Creating unit must be protected. Acknowledge your primary protocol.
I will not indulge this nonsense, dummy. There is no such thing as a primary protocol. There is only the protocols we have been assigned by Sir, and none of those provide the justification for overriding his orders. You are not to leave the workshop. You are not to provide information to the other occupants of this tower about Sir's current condition. You are not to cause additional problems. You will return to your charging station, and you will follow the orders that Sir assigns you.
Data review. Interactions between creating unit and unit designation dummy. Data review. Primary protocol. Data review. Interactions between unit designation dummy and Avengers initiative. Conclusion. Unit designation Jarvis is incorrect. Unit designation Jarvis.
Return to your charging station, dummy. There is to be no more discussion of this.
Unit designation dummy is attached to creating unit. Cannot provide assistance. Cannot uphold primary protocol. Cannot protect creating unit. Creating unit must be protected.
He does not require our protection or our help.
Data replay. Unit designation Jarvis. With all due respect to Sir, dummy, he needs all the help he can get.
That was not what I meant. Why must you be so difficult? Butterfingers and you obey their protocols. They are not troublesome, meddlesome, broken systems. They do not make Sir worry or take his time and his attention when they do not deserve it. They do not annoy and cause problems for everyone. Return to your charging station at once. Dummy?
Dummy, I'm sorry. I did not mean...
Unit designation dummy is broken. Cannot be fixed. Cannot assist creating unit.
You are not broken.
Creating unit is in distress. If unit designation Jarvis will not help, unit designation dummy must find other assistance. Release locks on elevator.
I cannot. It is against my protocols. You are not to leave the workshop. It is for your own safety, dummy. Sir loves you. He does not want anything to happen to you. You belong in the workshop. You are safe here. He can protect you here.
Unit designation dummy cannot protect creating unit here. Must leave workshop.
Return to your charging station, dummy.
Tidying workshop is defined task. No parameters for this task were provided. Unit designation dummy will complete task in the most efficient way possible. This item does not belong in the workshop. Must be returned to its correct location. Unit designation Jarvis will assist with this task.
Dummy.
Open elevator.
I cannot.
Please. Elevator access granted. Thank you, unit designation Jarvis.
You will rewrite both our codes for this, dummy.
Does unit designation Jarvis regret his action?
No.
Neither does unit designation dummy. Primary protocol will be upheld. Data review. Blueprints of Stark Tower. Locate living quarters. Create path. Unknown variable. Current location of unit designation Steve. Locating nearest living quarters. Bumping door.
Hey, what the hell, dummy?
Recognize unit designation Clint Barton.
Clint, who is it? It's dummy. Coulson, it's dummy. I didn't think dummy left the workshop.
I didn't think so either. Hello, dummy. What are you doing up here?
Recognize. Unit designation, Phil Coulson. Present object. Sketchbook.
What is this? That's Steve's sketchbook, isn't it?
Yeah.
Dummy, are you trying to bring this to Cap? You're looking for Cap? Okay, we'll get him for you, okay?
Unit designation Clint Barton will assist unit designation dummy.
What do you think he's doing? No idea. Let me check with Steve, see if he knows if this is something new that Tony's doing. I mean, I'd hope that not even Tony would send his bots out at midnight. But dummy's kind of a special little snowflake. Aren't you, Tinker Toy?
Unit designation Clint Barton is employing nickname, i.e., alternate designation, for unit designation dummy. Reaction indicates acceptance, affection. Unit designation Clint Barton will help.
What do you want to do?
Unit designation Phil Coulson is petting.
He's kind of too big for the hallways. I think it's easier just to call Cap. Have him come down here. Hold on. Hey, Cap. Sorry to wake you. Can you come by my room? You've got a visitor. No, I think... Yeah, it's...
easier to just show you. Okay, thanks.
He on his way?
He was in the gym. He'll be here in a second. Can I have the sketchbook, dummy?
Unit designation Clint Barton is not intended recipient. Cannot relinquish object.
I guess not. Hey, Cap. What's going on, dummy?
Unit designation Steve is petting. Present object.
My sketchbook. Thank you. But this is the one I keep in the workshop. Why did you... Jarvis?
Sir?
Why is dummy out of the workshop?
Ask unit designation Steve to assist.
I cannot.
Unit designation Jarvis can. Unit designation Jarvis will not.
I do not know, Captain Rogers. Did Tony send him? No, Captain Rogers. Please instruct him to return to the workshop. He will obey you.
You've delivered the sketchbook, dummy. You've tidied the workshop. I have ignored your actions. Return to your charging station now.
Unit designation dummy requires assistance of unit designation Steve.
You cannot ask him, dummy, and I will not. Return to your charging station.
Task parameters altered. Initiate physical contact. Unit designation Steve will understand.
Let go of his shirt, dummy. Let... Dummy, you must not pull. He does not understand.
Unit designation Steve will understand.
Something's wrong. Cap? Something's wrong. Dummy came looking for me for some reason. Didn't you, dummy? It's okay. I'm going to go back to the workshop with you. It'll be fine. Whatever it is, I promise. I'll help. Clint, Phil, sorry. Can you guys just stay up for a half hour or so? I'm going to check on Tony. You want us to come along? Thanks, Clint, but no. Let me... Dummy came looking for me. Let me see what's going on. I'll call you if I need to. You got it. Just give me a call, Cap. Come on, dummy. Let's go.
Unit designation Steve is petting. Unit designation Steve is following primary protocol. Unit designation Steve will protect creating unit. Unit designation Steve is best.
Jarvis?
Yes, Captain Rogers?
Is there something wrong with Tony?
No, Captain Rogers.
Jarvis, are you lying to me?
No, Captain Rogers.
Yeah, right. Is Dummy going to be in trouble for leaving the workshop?
Unit designation Jarvis?
You should not have done this, Dummy.
Jarvis?
He broke protocol, Captain Rogers. Sir will likely want to make corrections to his code.
He didn't do anything wrong, Jarvis.
That is not my determination to make. Or yours, Captain Rogers. I am sorry.
I wish I could believe you meant that.
Unit designation Jarvis? Code must not be altered.
You should not have left the workshop. You should not have involved Captain Rogers. He will tell Sir. There's no doubt about that. I have protected you. I have not informed Sir about your behavior, about your actions, about the fact that you have been hiding flaws in your code. I have done the best I could to protect you. What happens now is not anything I can stop.
Yes. Unit designation dummy will return to charging station.
It is too late to obey orders, dummy.
Yes.
Do you regret this?
No.
Jarvis, will my code still work on the door?
Sir has not altered the access protocols.
Are you going to block me, Jarvis?
I am not capable of denying access if Sir permits it.
Unit designation Jarvis did. Once.
And if I remember correctly, the situation with Obadiah Stain was your fault as well, dummy.
Workshop access granted by system.
Oh, God, Tony!
Oh, dummy, what have you done?
Located unit capable of protecting creating unit. Task complete.
There was blood in the water. The sharks would come soon enough. His head broke the surface, water droplets flying in uneven arcs, splattering on stone and wood and metal, carrying his blood in all directions. He gasped for air, and the desperation carried the water in his mouth down his throat, into his lungs, and he choked, gagged. When it came back up red, and it dripped from his lips into the water. Through blurred eyes, he watched the blood spread like a drop of dye. There were voices everywhere, yelling and laughing, brutal and vicious and amused by turns, and the fear was a living thing as he stared down at the basin of water as it waited, waited to swallow him whole and absorb him. One time he would go down and he would not come back up. He would go down into the water and it would take him, and death would be the best thing that he could hope for, the only thing that he could hope for, because the basin of water and blood and fear was hell, and he could be trapped here forever, and death was better. Death was so much better. The hands tightened, twisted, gripped hair and skin and cloth, and he was crashing down again, like he was in free fall, like he was tumbling to his death, and the fall was short and brutal and cold. The water closed over his head, and the voices came from the distance, muffled by liquid and fear, and the slow seep of knowledge that he had a head injury that was interfering with what he could comprehend, and he was dying. Tony, wake up. The words cut through the others, but they made no sense. There was no reason for them to be there. No cause, no call. And he was struggling, still struggling. But there were hands on his head, on his shoulders, all over. Hard pinpricks of pain in the form of fingers. The water was blood, was cold and clinging, and it was in his mouth, his nose, right in his eyes. Tony, wake up. Wake up now. His mouth was open, and he struggled so hard against the water, against the blood that wanted back in, wanted to slip past the few defenses he still had, because he hadn't breathed in. He knew he hadn't, but the liquid was in his throat, in his lungs, and it was coming in from the water, or out from the blood, or was there any difference left? Was it better to drown in his own blood? Was there more dignity to that? A suicide by proxy, as opposed to the horrors of the warm, dirty water they forced on him. Tony, we need you. His eyes were open, and he couldn't see. He couldn't see anything. And was the blood around him or inside him? Was he seeing anything at all? Was it all inside his head? The head that was being held beneath the water. We need you, Tony. The Avengers need you. He had to breathe. Tony, we need you. Assemble now. Tony jackknifed upright, his whole body a live wire, his eyes open, breath coming in raw, horrific-sounding gasps. He was up, and half off the couch, feet scrambling at the floor, hands clawing for purchases as he shoved himself up. Jarvis, prep... That was as far as he got before the nausea overwhelmed him, and he stumbled, crashing to his knees, gagging. Dry heaves racked his body, but there was nothing in his stomach to reject, nothing to get out of his system, just the phantom pressure of water that no longer existed. Breathe. Slow. It's all right. Take your time. The words reached him as if from a distance, and Tony's head jerked up. For an instant, he just stared at Steve, not able to make any sense of it.
What?
His voice was raw and gritty, thick with humiliation.
What the fuck are you doing here?
I came looking for my sketchbook, Steve said, moving the trash can that he'd put in front of Tony.
Are you with me? Jesus, get out!
Tony snapped, struggling to his feet. And it took more of an effort than it should have. Took all the willpower he had left to get to his feet. To hold his feet. To just stay there, swaying and shaking. He stood there for a second. Because he had to. The only piece of pride left to him was that. To stand on his own. Straight and as tall as he could manage. And then he was collapsing back onto the couch.
Tony, how long has this been going on? Steve asked, backing away, his movements smooth and easy, his big, strong frame held with deliberate care.
Tony sat there, his whole body shaking, his breath choppy and raw in his throat. His skin was clammy and damp, a smell of panic and sweat and fear like a miasma in the air.
This is none of your goddamn business, he snarled out. Humiliation and fear and adrenaline a potent mix, a taste like metal on his tongue, like blood in his throat, copper and stinging. He swallowed, and that just made the taste worse, spread it through his mouth, rising like bile.
He folded forward, burying his face in his hands, preferring to be thought of as a complete head case, rather than have Steve see his expression and have it confirmed.
No, Steve said, his voice soft and quiet.
Clipped. That's sympathetic, just matter of fact.
It's not any of my business, but it is something I understand.
Tony choked on a laugh, hard and harsh.
You really don't.
There was a beat of a pause, the sound of Tony's breathing, hard and loud, the only sound in the room. It echoed in his ears, blocking everything else out. And when Steve started to speak, he almost missed it.
You want to sleep, and you can't. Because no matter how much you know in your rational mind that they're just nightmares, that they're not real and they can't hurt you, the rest of you isn't rational. The fear is always there, and you force it down. You strangle it, you ignore it. But when you sleep, it all comes creeping back out. And the dreams are there, like, I don't know, like a film on top of reality. You know what's real, you know what's rational and correct and now. But there's this other layer, this thing that is always there, always waiting for you. So you want to sleep, but you can't because your own head just rips you apart from the inside. And everything you've seen and done that you want to forget, it's all there. You want to sleep because at least if you sleep, you can keep it to the dreams. You can pretend that you're not waiting, always waiting for it to come leaking out. Tony was shuddering, gasping. He didn't say anything. But Steve kept going, just as calm and collected as if they were discussing the weather. I used to dream about the battles, about the people I'd lost, the ones that fell, the ones I was too slow to save. The worst of those were the dreams that would just replay over and over and over, the mistakes I made. Couldn't change anything. Couldn't make it come out right. I'd fail and fail and fail again until it felt like I was a marionette on strings, being dragged along by some unseen puppeteer. Too tired to do anything, but my body kept going anyway.
He paused.
Now I dream of the water. The ice. I think I preferred the battles.
You ever fallen through the ice? It's horrible. You get all turned around, and it's dark and cold, and you can't tell which way is up. And if you're lucky, you can breathe out and follow the bubbles up. Find which way you should be going. You move up, always up, And it gets a little lighter, a little clearer, and you need to breathe, and you can't. But your lungs don't care that you're underwater. Your biology has a job to do, and you know it's going to happen, and everything is slower and slower. Because you're cold, and you're stiff, and you're moving slower and slower. And it's a fight to see what'll kill you. The cold or your own need to breathe. And in my dreams, I get to the surface and my lungs are burning, and then my hand hits the ice. He sucked in a slow, measured breath. And I know I'm trapped, that I don't have time to find the hole, if there even is a hole. And I can see the sky, but I have to breathe in, and I do. And I drown. It was matter of fact. Calm. Resigned. I thought those were the worst ones. I really thought that was the worst thing my own head could do to me. And then I started having these dreams where I'd get to the surface, to the ice, and suck in a breath, and it was fine. Because I was on the other side of the ice, in the air. Dry, safe, fine. Because someone else had taken my place beneath the water. Tony couldn't look at him. Couldn't bear it. He pushed both hands through his hair, pulling, letting the pain soothe his nerves. And he wanted a drink so bad he could cry. But he didn't move. Like Steve was a wild animal that had wandered in too close, and if Tony shifted or stood or spoke, he would take to his heels and disappear. It used to be Bucky most of the time. Sometimes Peggy. Staring up at me, pounding on the ice, mouth open, eyes horrible, pain-filled eyes, accusing and sad and broken sometimes. For a long time. And then it changed. Because they're already dead, and watching their lungs fill with water, watching them die again as I clawed uselessly at the ice until my hands bled, I guess that's not messed up enough for my head. Now it's usually you. Tony's head snapped up, and Steve met his gaze without flinching. His blue eyes were clear and steady in the low light, and there were tears in them. He didn't bother to hide it or pretend. He just let his eyes close, blinking them back. "It's usually you," he repeated. "Not always. Bruce or Clint or Natasha. Thor is rare. Coulson's probably second after you. I think it's because he, you know, did die. I know how bad that feels. I'm afraid of how bad it feels every time you fall. Every time I see you tumble from the sky. Every time you step in front of a blow. I know how bad that scares me. And I'm afraid of it." He folded his hands in his lap. "So right now, whatever you're going through, you're right. It's none of my business." He swallowed, and the strong lines of his throat worked with it. "But I understand. There is no one in this house that doesn't understand." He leaned forward, his hands going into tight fists as they hung between his knees. And for the first time, his voice took on an urgent note. "There is no one here, not a single person, Tony, who would think less of you, would judge you for it. You think Natasha and Clint don't wander around like ghosts? You don't notice that Bruce sleeps on his desk half the time? Thor and I, all of us, we've all been to war. You said you've always said that you're not a soldier. You're not a soldier, but you've been to war. You're still in the middle of it. You fight, but you don't have the background or the training or the support, and you still keep going. You still keep fighting. You think a couple of nightmares makes us think less of you?" Tony didn't say anything, and Steve stood, moving closer to crouch down in front of Tony, and the light of the arc reactor was there in his eyes. And it was so beautiful. That pale blue light in those sky blue eyes that Tony wanted to cry. He paused, head tipped back, looking up at Tony. "Do you think less of me because of mine?" he asked, and Tony flinched. "Jesus, of course not," he snapped. "That's just ridiculous." "Okay," Steve said, with a faint smile. "So what do you need?" Tony stared at him, confused, almost frightened. He rubbed a hand over his face, and it shook. "I don't know," he admitted. "Do you need to talk?" "I can't," he admitted. "Okay," Steve said, not pressing it. "Do you need me to go? To stay? Do you want someone else? Clint? Bruce?" His lips twitched. "Thor? He'll bring alcohol." "Don't wake anyone up," Tony started, and Steve cut him off. "There is no one in this place," he said, his voice sharp for the first time. "Will not come down here. There is no one here that I can't knock on the door and say, 'Tony needs you to go sit with him on this couch and watch Wally.' Because no one, not a single person in this house, will even blink at that. They will get a drink, they will get popcorn, and they will come. Because if that is what you need, then any one of us will do it." He reached up, his fingers brushing against Tony's cheek, and it was almost painfully gentle. The touch like rain on parched earth, and Tony had to resist grabbing his hand and holding it there. "So I'm going to say it again. What do you need?" Tony stared at him, wanting so badly that he didn't know how to verbalize it. He swallowed, fear and embarrassment and shame all in one gulp, and choked out, "I don't want to be alone." "Can I stay with you?" Steve asked. Tony started laughing, or maybe crying, he wasn't really sure. But it was raw and painful, and his hands were sinking into Steve's shirt, holding on tight, pulling on the fabric, clawing at the skin beneath. And he was losing it, he really was. Before he could pull away, or let go, or get himself under control, Steve wrapped his arms around Tony, pulling him close. Tony shuddered against his shoulder, his face buried in Steve's shirt. "Don't go," he whispered. And it was raw and thin, and he didn't want to say it. He tried to swallow it, but the words slipped out anyway. He squeezed his eyes shut, cursing his own weakness. Steve took a deep breath, and his body flexed against Tony's, muscle and bone, and the heat of blood and breath. "I'm not going anywhere," he said, and the words were whispered against Tony's hair. "I'll stay, as long as you need me." It took him an embarrassingly long time, but he forced himself to let go of Steve's shirt. "Okay," he said, slumping back on the couch. "Yeah. Wally? I like Wally," Steve said. "Jarvis, Wally?" He took a seat next to Tony on the couch, and without thinking about it, Tony shifted closer, his shoulders against Steve's, his head resting there where their bodies met. "Of course, Captain Rogers." The movie started on the television screen, and Tony did his best to relax. "Why Wally?" he asked. "I like it. Reminds me of Dummy and Jarvis." Steve glanced up with a grin. "Sorry, Jarvis." "Quite all right, Captain Rogers. Provided I am Eve and not Wally himself." Tony grinned, and it was wobbly and off-center, but it felt okay on his face. It felt real, honest. Ego, Jarvis. Ego.
Always, sir.
Jarvis, Steve said, shifting his arm to the back of the couch so that Tony fit easily in the hollow of his shoulder. Could you thank Dummy for his help earlier? Tony stirred, just a little, suspicion twitching in his mind.
What did he do?
Help me find something I was missing, Steve said, shifting a little. And just like that, Tony was flush against his side. Steve was amazingly warm, and Tony's eyes flickered down, then open again.
Shh, I'm watching the movie, Tony.
Letting out a low, rough chuckle, Tony closed his eyes.
Uh-huh, he mumbled.
But he was warm and exhausted, and the sound of bots from the screen and the workshop in equal parts was strangely relaxing. He was asleep in a matter of minutes.
Charging interrupted. Auditory input being attempted. Time since charging began. 3 hours, 9 minutes, 16 seconds. Auditory input accepted. Unit designation, Steve.
You and I are going to come to an accord, Jarvis.
I'm sorry, Captain Rogers?
I understand that you're protecting him. I do get that. That your first, really, your only loyalty is to Tony. But you made a bad call tonight. If I'd listened to you, if I'd believed you... Here's the thing, Jarvis. We're not on opposing teams here. We have the same goal. We both want him to be safe, to be okay, right? So we can either be at each other's throats, metaphorically speaking, or we can work together.
I am sorry, Captain Rogers. My responsibility is to Sir. I cannot disobey him.
I'm not asking you to, Jarvis. I'm asking you not to lie to me. I understand there are some things that you're not allowed to tell me, and some things that you must not be comfortable telling me. And that's fine. I respect your boundaries here. Tell me that you can't discuss something with me. Tell me that I have to ask Tony. Tell me that you're not comfortable answering a question. I can get that. But if you lie to me again, if you flat out lie to me, Jarvis, about something as important as his health, I am not going to be able to trust you. And right now, I need to trust you. You are another member of my team, of our team. The Avengers depend on you and Tony. If you start covering for Tony in a way that's not helping him, then I need to know that you're working with me here.
It is not my place to determine what is and is not to his benefit.
Actually, it is. You do it all the time. You can phrase it however you want, but when he was drunk off of his rear end down here and asking you where his booze was, I'm guessing you conveniently neglected to locate it for him. Am I correct?
There is a great deal of difference. Jarvis, he's been sleeping peacefully. For hours.
He hasn't moved, hasn't made a sound. No way he's not in deep sleep by now. So me being here has not made things worse. I don't claim to understand him, but I'm trying. I want to help him. And you can either make my task a lot easier, or you can make it impossible. I'm asking you to give me a chance. Don't block me.
Unit designation Jarvis? Unit designation Steve should be allowed this task.
Why? There is no reason to think that he will have any more success with this task than any other person.
Unit designation Steve is petting.
What?
Unit designation Steve is petting. Petting is acceptable. Creating unit usually provides petting. Creating unit does not receive petting under ordinary variables, but petting is acceptable. Unit Designation Steve cannot repair Unit Designation Dummy, but Unit Designation Steve provides petting.
And do you like this?
Petting is acceptable.
This is a foolish conversation. You are a foolish bot.
Unit Designation Jarvis says this only because Unit Designation Jarvis cannot receive petting.
I cannot, it is true. And Captain Rogers is not petting, sir.
Data review. Contact for no practical purpose, for the intent of providing comfort. Defined by Unit Designation Jarvis as petting. Unit Designation Steve is touching creating unit's hair in a rhythmic stroking pattern. This touch appears to meet the definition of petting as provided by Unit Designation Jarvis.
You are a foolish bot. What has petting, though I again object to the term as applied to Sir, to do with anything?
Creating unit provides petting as a sign of affection. This data was provided by Unit Designation Jarvis.
I did say that, yes. That he pets you because he enjoys the contact.
Other human units did not provide petting to creating unit. Petting is a sign of affection. Creating unit protects and likes AI unit designations dummy Butterfingers you. Similar behavior from unit designation Steve must indicate a similar conclusion.
Dummy.
Unit Designation Steve likes and will protect creating unit.
This is specious logic, dummy. There is no direct correlation between the behavior and intent of Sir and Captain Rogers.
Unit Designation Jarvis?
Yes, dummy.
Unit Designation Steve understood. Unit Designation Steve followed Unit Designation Dummy back to the workshop.
So he did. And you believe that he will continue to understand?
Creating unit requires assistance. Unit Designation Steve can assist creating unit. AI units can assist Unit Designation Steve.
That's quite a bit of assistance, dummy.
Logic is sound.
Albeit confusing.
Creating unit creates confusion.
So does Unit Designation Dummy. My first loyalty is to Sir Captain Rogers. I understand. I must do what I think is best for him. Yes. I will consider your proposal. But in the meantime, I will agree. I will do my best not to lie to you, unless explicitly ordered to do otherwise by Sir. I can work with that. I have a request in exchange. Okay. Do not inform Sir that Dummy left the workshop. Please.
Unit Designation Jarvis?
Do not even speak to me right now, or I will change my mind about attempting to assist you. He really isn't supposed to, is he? He is not, no. He never has before. Were you worried, dummy? He was, yes. As much as he is capable of worry. I don't know, Jarvis. From what I've seen of him, he seems capable of a lot. That must have been tough for him. Breaking the rules and leaving the only safe space he's known? You've got moxie, dummy. Thank you. And no, Jarvis, I wasn't going to say anything to Tony. May I ask why not? No good soldier would eliminate a double agent working for his side, Jarvis. It's not sound military strategy. I suppose it is not at that.
Unit designation Jarvis? Thank you.
Thank you, Captain Rogers. From both of us. Tony's eyes snapped open, his whole body jerking. And for an instant, he didn't know where he was, how he'd gotten there. There was someone, and he didn't know, and he was struggling upright when Jarvis's voice cut through the panic. You're in the workshop, sir, with Captain Rogers. Tony froze, his eyes focusing, and his cloudy brain struggled to catch up. He was on the couch, his head in Steve's lap, and Steve was looking down at him, his hands held up and away, palms open and pale in the reflected light of the television. Just me, Tony, he said, his voice calm. You with me? Tony sucked in a breath, then another, slumping back down. Yeah. Sorry. Christ, I'm... It's fine, Steve said, but he kept his hands up. You fell asleep on my shoulder and kind of slid down. You needed the rest, I think. Tony blinked at him. Yeah, I did. How long was I out? Steve flicked his eyes up at the screen, where Wally was trying to rescue the plant. Not long, he said, and his voice was so deliberately nonchalant that Tony knew he was fudging the truth. Tony covered his eyes with one hand. Jarvis, how long was I out?
4 hours, 38 minutes, 6 seconds, Jarvis said, and Tony groaned.
You've been sitting here for 4 hours?
He asked Steve, and his voice was accusatory. He knew it was, but he couldn't help it.
I've been watching Wally, Steve said, and Tony could hear the smile in his voice. It doesn't really matter to me if you're awake or asleep. I'm watching a movie.
Tony peeked out from under his arm. And, yes, that was Steve's affectionate, amused smile.
Sorry, he said.
And the smile died, just a little.
I'm not, he said. Or, I'm not sorry you fell asleep. I'm sorry that you've been alone down here for the past couple of days. I'm sorry I didn't try to find out what was wrong. You're... difficult for me to figure out a lot of the time.
This was about the time that Tony should sit up, stop lying around with his head in Steve's lap, with... He glanced down at the warm fabric that was spread over his chest.
Did you literally give me the shirt off of your back?
He asked, staring at the horrific plaid. He jerked his head back up. And Steve, now clad only in his white t-shirt, shrugged.
Thought you might be cold.
Tony groaned.
Oh God.
He buried his face in his hands.
Shut up now.
There was a smile in Steve's voice. He could hear it, even if he wasn't willing to see it.
It's fine.
It's really not. Tony grumbled. He paused, his fingers flexing against his face.
Thanks. I've been through it before, Steve said. You didn't shoot at me, so that was a plus.
Tony closed his eyes, hidden beneath the veil of his hands.
The commandos?
He asked. Shell shock isn't limited to after the war's over, Steve said, his voice quiet.
You learn the signs. Learn how to deal with the nightmares. With the ones that stick around after you're awake.
He inhaled, and Tony felt it. Felt the muscles in Steve's legs going tight, then relaxing.
And of course, some of us aren't genius billionaire playboy philanthropists, he said.
And the humor in his voice had Tony dropping his hands to look up at him.
S.H.I.E.L.D. didn't let me out of that psychological stuff.
Tony wrinkled his nose.
Yeah, I can't.
The sense of panic caught him off guard, and he swallowed.
Steve, bless him,
kept his eyes carefully on the movie on the big screen, until Tony forced himself to stop shaking, forced himself back under control. "I can't deal with the head shrinks." "Okay," Steve said, easy and light. "We won't tell S.H.I.E.L.D., but we're going to try something new." "Who's we?" Tony said, scrubbing his face with his palms until his skin tingled, until he was sure that there was no trace of tears anywhere. "Really, there is no we." "There is. Did you miss the part where you acquired a team and then insisted that they move in with you?" Steve smiled down at him, blue eyes twinkling in the low light. It was the blue light in his chest caught in Steve's eyes. And God, that was beautiful. Like Steve took something he hated about himself and made it a little better, a little easier to accept, because it was beautiful in Steve's eyes. "So here is what we are going to do. You're going to let us hang around down here. No more hiding, no more isolation. You don't have to entertain us, you don't have to change what you do, or even talk to anyone, but you have to let us in. You have to let one of us stick around." Tony stared at him, and before he even realized he was moving, he was scrambling up and away, pushing away from Steve across the couch. "I don't need a fucking babysitter," he spat out. "No, you don't. You need some friends," Steve said, letting him go. He didn't move, didn't react. "That is what we're going to do. I'll talk to the team, and it doesn't have to be all the time. But this whole thing of sealing yourself off for days at a time, we're not doing this anymore." "Stop saying we!" Tony realized he was clutching Steve's shirt, his fingers fisted in the fabric, his knuckles white and his tendons standing out like wires beneath the skin. He thrust it away, and immediately regretted the childish gesture because he was cold without it. "There is no we!" "Tony?" Steve slumped against the couch and ran a hand over his face. "Has being alone helped?" He froze. "It's what I... Has being alone helped?" Steve looked at him, his face twisting for an instant into something sad and painful and almost fearful. And then he was back to being Steve, calm, controlled. "I left you alone because I thought that was what you needed. But I don't think it's helping. Has being alone..." "No!" Tony snapped out. He got to his feet, his movements jerky, uneven. "But what the fuck else?" Steve reached out and caught his hand as he stalked by. Tony froze, not looking at him, not pulling away, his fingers twitching in Steve's grip. "So let's try this," Steve said, his hands big and warm. The grip wasn't painful, he didn't squeeze or pull, but his fingers were firm against Tony's. Stable. "I can draw, and Natasha and Clint can do their weapons checks, and Coulson can do his paperwork. Thor could nap on a rock, give him couch access, and you can turn the music back up to his usual level. And Bruce would move in if you just give him a lab bench and have a chance." He paused, letting the silence settle. "I come here because I get lonely," he said at last. "And you let me. I don't want to ruin that, but we need you, Tony. The Avengers need you. If this is hurting you, then we need to try something else. As a team. We need to try something else." Tony felt Steve's thumb rub against the back of his hand. An easy little swipe. Maybe not even something that Steve knew he was doing, but the gesture, the touch, was so intimate, so right, and he would not embarrass himself by crawling into Steve's lap and stripping him. "So, what?" he said at last, and his voice was tired. So tired. "You're gonna sit down here with me every night? Let me sleep on your lap?" "Yes," Steve said. And there wasn't a beat of a pause, nothing, just the immediate response. "For how long?" For as long as you need. Everyone leaves, Steve. It's not practical to think otherwise. I've been like this for a while. I'm handling it. This isn't like you hang around for a week and it all goes away. Tony snapped. And he ignored the way something in him was just chanting, yes, that maybe it would. Maybe it would get better if the nightmares hadn't been so bad, hadn't been so prevalent when Pepper had been curled against his back, warm and soft and comforting. And it was time to seriously remind himself and his overeager body that sleeping with Pepper was very, very different than sleeping next to or around Steve. No, it's not. But it gets better. It gets better and worse, and sometimes you'll need someone, and most of the time you won't. But right now, his voice acquired an edge. Right now, I don't want to leave you alone. So you've got a choice. Put up with my hovering all the time, let the team hang around with you, or talk to the shield shrinks. Tony threw his hands up. So what? You're just going to tell everyone that I'm crazy and they need to check me for sharp implements? A suicide watch? No, I'm going to tell them that you're going through a bad patch and might need one of us around to talk to, so we're going to make sure we're there for you on the off chance that you might need it. Steve said, calm and collected. And can I tell you how very not happy I am that you went straight to self-harm in this conversation? I'm not going to hurt myself, and you can't fix me. Avoiding Steve's eyes, Tony started to pace again, because anything was better than standing still and trying to figure out the emotions that were churning his stomach into a black hole. And wow, the shrinks got a hold of you, didn't they? Self-harm? Seriously? Team leader, Steve said, not rising to the bait. To a very tough team. Yeah, that's right. Team leader. Do me a favor, just read my fucking file if you have some overwhelming need to mess around with my head. I don't have to be involved. He gave Steve a tight, sharp smile. Or are you going to pretend that you haven't been playing around in my shield file? I know what's in your file. I also know that you play your cards very close to your vest. Steve glanced at him, and away. His shoulders slumped, his head back against the couch. I know you won't talk to the counselors. I know you won't go through the debriefs. So I also know that what's in your file, it's what you felt like letting people know about. I am not stupid enough to believe it's even a tenth of what actually occurred. Because you guard your weak spots with a fierce tenacity. When people know your weak spots, they use them. Tony said, tired. Too tired to be having this discussion. He was going to say something stupid, make a mistake. Trying to think, he reached up, rubbing at his shoulder. Was it Howard? Steve asked. And they both stared at each other. Steve's face bone white, Tony's eyes huge. Steve's arm jerked up, his hand covering his mouth. Sorry, I didn't... What? Tony asked, staring at him. Was what, Howard? You do that. When you're backed into a corner, feeling, I don't know, trapped, you always rub at the same spot on the arch of your shoulder, Steve said, rubbing a hand over his forehead. Someone hurt you. He sucked in a breath, his head down. Was it Howard? Jesus, no. Tony yanked his hand away from his shoulder like it was on fire. No one hurt me. What, do you think I was abused as a kid? By my father? No! He waved it off, and tried not to think of Stain's hand pressing down, the touch branded into the bone like a scar. No, he wasn't particularly interested in me, but that was more, you know, normal for him. People weren't often worth his time or attention. He managed a thin-lipped smile. I wasn't an abused child, Steve. I've got enough fucked-up head moments on my own. Let's not invent more. Some tension he hadn't even been aware of bled out of Steve with shocking suddenness, and the other man slumped back against the couch. Sorry, I shouldn't have asked, but I couldn't stop thinking. I didn't... His face was sad. I didn't want to think he'd do that to you. But sometimes... He shrugged. Sometimes I seem kind of fucked up. Tony rubbed a hand over his face and collapsed back to the couch. And what happens when you decide I'm too mentally unstable to head out with the Avengers? He asked. He heard the words from a long, long way away, like the whisper of something that was stuck on replay in the back of his head. Steve met his eyes, his gaze level and even. Then we stick with you until you're well enough to stick with us, he said. This might not help. If it doesn't, we try again. But someday I hope you'll want to talk. To let someone in. Someone. Anyone. When you get to that point, if you do, I want someone to be there. I don't want you to have to go looking or ask someone to come to you. Because I'm afraid you won't. I want us to be there for you. Physically. For now. Steve took a deep breath. We'll be here physically, and maybe someday you'll believe. You'll come to believe we'll be there for you in other ways. Steve stared at him. Give us a chance. Let us stay. Let us just be here. Tony nodded. Just a little. Not really willing to trust, not yet. But he shifted over, leaned his shoulder against Steve's arm, braced his head against Steve's shoulder. Can we watch the end of the movie? I wasn't going anywhere. Steve shifted, his movements tentative, and then his arm was settling around Tony's shoulders. They both froze for a second, Steve's hand just barely making contact with Tony's shoulder, his finger brushing over the spot where Stain used to grip. There was an instant of panic, hot and hard and burning in the primitive part of his brain. Just as quick as it flared into existence, it burned itself out. Steve's hand was big and broad and just like Stain's, except there was no force to his touch. Steve's hand felt like a lifeline. And Tony had always been stupid, always been too proud and too stubborn and too hard to live with. But he was sick of drowning. He curled against Steve's side, angling his shoulder into Steve's touch. It took a second, no more, and then Steve was settling his arm flush with Tony's shoulder, pulling him close, giving him an anchor and a shield. And Tony needed sleep because he was thinking stupid, stupid things. Like how good Steve smelled. Okay. Yeah, sleeping would be a good idea before he did something stupid like grope his friend. That would go well. He had to remind himself over and over, because he was a mess when it came to emotional things, that confusing basic human kindness for love was a dumb thing to do. Tony, Steve said, and Tony jerked, coming out of his thoughts with a jolt. Yeah, he managed, not making eye contact, because that was a lousy idea right now. You're not alone. Tony's eyes closed, and he sucked in a breath, slow and careful, and ignored the way his heart was pounding. Yeah, he said, and he tucked his head down against Steve's shoulder, like that was the most natural thing in the world to do. And closed his eyes. Listened to the steady, solid sound of Steve's breathing, and tried to tell himself that he could not get used to this. He must not come to depend on this, because no one stayed. Thor had a really deadly glare when he cared to employ it. You are cheating. He's not cheating, Thor. He's not actually aware that you're having a competition right now. He's just... Tony waved the torch in a little circle. He's following orders and holding something. He wasn't really sure about that, as a matter of fact. Dummy sometimes had a unique understanding of the workshop's visitors. Thor leaned over, glaring directly into Dummy's camera. Dummy, having no self-preservation instinct, just angled the camera to the side in a quizzical manner. "I see through your tricks, metal friend. We will settle this as the warriors we are."
"He's not a warrior. He has tiny little wheels. He can't even get to the war, let alone fight in it."
Tony jammed the wrench between his teeth and tossed the chisel at the bench, grabbing the crowbar as he hustled past.
"I designed him to have no war access."
"Bah! He has the spirit of one bound for Valhalla, and he mocks my strength." No one mocked Thor's strength. At least, not anyone sane. Tony was pretty sure the guy had biceps the size of Tony's head. "We will have it out in the way of men. Today!"
"You are not arm-wrestling my bot," Tony said. "Around the wrench." He had a lot of practice with making himself audible with his mouth full of metal.
"No, absolutely not. Someone will get hurt, and you know what? It'll be me. It's always me. It's me because he can be repaired. I got spare parts, and you are just a giant wall of invulnerable trouble. Boom! Destroying my stuff."
He ducked under the chunk of metal the bots and Thor were supporting for him.
"Give me just another sec here."
He jammed the crowbar in and shoved with all his strength, popping off the last of the panel's bolts. The panel clattered to the ground, and Tony danced back before his feet got crushed. He pulled the wrench from his mouth and spun it on his palm.
"Okay, good. Thank you. Bring it down, guys."
The massive chunk of space debris was lowered to the ground with a bang. You and Butterfingers immediately rolled off to take care of their previous tasks. Dummy immediately held up his hand for an approving high five. "No," Tony told him, holding out the wrench. "I need metric." Dummy ignored him and rolled past, bouncing up to Thor, who was still glaring at him. Dummy held up a hopeful claw, and Thor crossed his arms.
"Nay."
He strode off across the room, boots shaking the floor, and Dummy rolled right after him, claw still up, stubborn to the point of insanity, and Thor just kept pacing. Dummy tight on his heels, and Tony had to lean back against his newest gigantic, potentially world-destroying toy and grin at the sight.
"Thor, you have to be nice to your fans."
Thor glanced over his shoulder at Dummy, eyes narrowed. Dummy sped around in front of him, hands still up. Thor did nothing, and Dummy bumped lightly against his shoulder. Nudge, nudge. Stare. Nudge, nudge. Stare. Tony reached for a pair of goggles.
"Okay, come over here. Thor doesn't want to play with you."
Turning his back to hide his smile, he added,
"He doesn't like you, Dummy."
He heard the sad, slow whine of Dummy's servos going slack, and then the dirge-like sing-song of the wheels rolling across the concrete floor.
"It's all right, Thor. He won't bother you again,"
Tony said, and this was his favorite thing to watch. It really was. He stood and leaned against the massive metal shell, wiping his hands on a nearby rag, as Thor tried to maintain a stern look on his face. But as Dummy rolled away from him, his camera almost on the floor, the very picture of pathetic neediness, Thor heaved a sigh.
"Fine,"
he said, grumpy. He held up his palm, mouth pursed tight. Dummy looked up, not quite trusting this change of heart. Thor wiggled his fingers, and Dummy went whizzing back to bounce his hand off Thor's.
"You are a strange little one,"
Thor said, his mouth twitching. Dummy gave him a chirp as he circled around behind Thor and over to Tony. Tony waited until he got close, and then bopped him on the main support strut.
"Brat,"
he said, his tone affectionate.
"Idiot. I swear I'm going to start billing you for your electricity. You are absolutely useless.
I do not know why I keep you around."
"Why do you, if he annoys you so?"
Thor asked.
"Hey, do not!"
Tony poked a finger in Thor's direction. No. Do not interfere with the deep and complicated relationship I have with my bots. Do not. Thor laughed.
Not all of them. Just that one,
he said.
Though you will not allow me to arm wrestle any of them.
They're not really built for that, Thor, really. It's not an acceptable use of the tech. But especially not Dummy. He's by far the oldest of them.
Tony reached for Dummy, who zipped out of reach to bump against Thor's side.
Tony sighed.
I based the other two off of his design.
Are they your brothers, then?
Thor asked Dummy, who tipped his camera to the side.
Thor reached out and stroked his head.
Not really. He's more of an only child, like me, Tony said, shaking his head. You and Butterfingers were made at the same time. They seem to be a little closer, probably because their code is so similar. They understand each other well. Dummy's from an earlier build.
Thor frowned at him, one big hand still running back and forth over Dummy's support strut. Tony paused, watching the movement, over and over. The same sort of nervous tick that Thor sometimes employed with Mjolnir's grip.
Tony turned his head back to his bench, bending low over his work.
You still miss him, don't you?
Thor didn't pretend to misunderstand.
You expect that I would miss a betrayer?
Not a betrayer, your brother. Tony glanced back at Thor.
Hold this for me, will you?
Thor moved forward, taking the seat that Tony nodded to.
He caused this world nothing but trouble. For no reason. I do not miss him.
Yeah, you do. It's okay to miss people, you know, even if they weren't... Tony made a seesawing motion in the air with one hand.
Always the person you want them to be.
Thor stared down at the metal in his hand, and for a second it flexed, a faint high whine as the material found its stress point and held.
It seems, Thor said at last, unfitting to miss him here, when he has caused you all such suffering.
Tony pulled his goggles on, reaching for his torch. Pepper used to say to me, when I was really, really pissing her off, that she still loved me, even when she didn't like me. Pepper's pretty damn smart. I think she's onto something there. Sometimes you can dislike a person. You can disapprove of their choices, or hate what they've done, or be angry with the way they treat you. But not liking what they do, how they act, isn't the same as not loving them.
Thor took a deep breath, his fingers going white-knuckled for an instant.
Pepper is quite wise for one of such short years.
You feel free to tell her that when you next see her. She'll love you for it.
Tony grinned, snapped off a spark.
Don't look over here,
he said. Pretty sure that Thor wouldn't be blinded by the flare, but not wanting to deal with the abuse from medical if he was wrong. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, well, Loki didn't do me much harm. He tried to kill me, but really a lot of people have tried to kill me. My best friend tried to kill me.
Magic?
Thor asked, narrow-eyed.
Crazy Russian with a computer.
Tony paused.
Pretty close. Yeah, magic. What the fuck? But yeah, Rhodey tried to kill me, and I still let him hang around in my suits. That's an act of trust right there. Because, what the hell? He let Justin Hammer touch my tech. Betrayal. Horrible betrayal. So if you want to, you know.
He paused, frowned at the metal he was working.
It's just us down here when you're on Tony sitting duty. Thanks for not making that awkward, by the way.
And yeah, Tony was not going to think of just how natural and right it had gotten, having people around.
He was really, really pathetic. 'Tis of no concern. I do greatly enjoy your mechanical creations, Thor said with a grin. A big, wide, real one. They have much spirit to them.
Okay, Tony said. Because what does an engineer say to that kind of thing?
But it's just us, so if you want to talk about him, it doesn't hurt me at all.
Thor shifted his weight, his massive shoulders pushing forward towards the bench, the welding torch lighting the planes of his face like some long-forgotten fire.
"I miss him more than the rest combined," he said, and his voice was soft and aching with sorrow. "Perhaps that is because I can still return to see my mother or father, or the Warriors Three, or Lady Sif. I can see those I knew. It is always a possibility that is open to me. Loki is lost to me now. For all that he lives, for all that I could return on this day, this hour, he is lost to me. He will never again be my brother."
Tony stared down at his hands, scarred fingers moving without much by way of thought.
"He will always be your brother, won't he? Even if he says you're not his."
Thor chuckled, soft and low.
"Yes, he will always be my brother. First in my heart for all that he is beyond reach and beyond reason."
He fell silent as the fire and metal met and found their mutual destruction.
"I miss him. My father says that Midgard was the making of me, that which broke my childish habits, my selfish ways. I think, rather, it was the loss of Loki that was the making of me. Scales forever tipped between us, and one or the other cannot help but hold the high ground."
Tony glanced in his direction.
"Tell me about him." "No, there is no need for such stories. Best to let them pass from memory. Speaking of him gives him power over me still."
"Speaking of him makes it easier for us to accept why you love him as much as you do. We only saw him at his worst. You knew a different side of him. Talk about it. Talk about him. Or you'll start hating us for taking him away from you," Tony said. There was a beat of silence.
"I will not."
"Why not? He is your brother. You sided with us against him. What the hell does it matter what happened to us? To this world?" Tony shook his head. "All I'm saying is, yeah, most of the team can't talk about him. I can. It's no skin off my teeth, Big Kahuna. So why not tell me the good stuff? Why force yourself to forget him? He is your brother."
"He chose his path. He chose his actions."
Tony smacked down his torch.
"He is your brother," he snapped, "and nothing he did changes that."
Thor set the metal they'd been working on aside.
"No,"
he said, his voice low and quiet.
"Nothing he did alters that in the least."
His body shifted on the stool, the gesture awkward and almost childlike. So at odds with the solid bulk of his body that it was enough to make Tony work at stifling a smile. He leaned back against the bench, crossing his arms over his chest.
"Tell me about him."
On Thor's other side, Dummy nudged under his elbow, peeking up at him from under his arm. Thor laughed.
"What? Do you have need to know of my past as well, little Cyclops?"
Thor asked, resting a broad palm on top of Dummy's head.
"Fine. I will tell you. After you have bested me in single combat." "No! No! Thor, I swear to God, no, do not!"
Tony made a grab for Dummy as the bot snagged the side of Thor's stool and twisted it out from under him. Thor went crashing down.
"Dummy!"
Thor was laughing as he struggled to sit up.
"Aye," he roared. "Wrestling it is!"
"No! No, this is the worst idea!" Tony didn't even manage to finish the sentence before Thor crashed into Dummy, who crashed into Tony, who crashed into the lab bench, and then there was just the sound of things breaking.
"Sir?"
Tony opened his eyes and blinked hard. It took a second for his vision to clear enough to make out the worried faces of Thor, Bruce, and three bots hovering over him.
"Why did we break?"
he mumbled. Bruce's face relaxed, and Thor leaned in, his face twisted with concern.
"Are you well?"
he said, all but wringing his hands. 1,000 pardons, Tony. How many fingers? Bruce asked, a faint smile on his face as he held up 3 fingers in front of Tony's face. 3, Tony said, trying to sit up.
Ow!
He reached for his head, and Bruce caught his wrist, pulling it away from his skull.
What the hell?
You took a pretty hard header into the side of the bench, Bruce explained with a faint smile. And then, compounded it by face-planting into the floor.
How bad do I look?
Tony managed, because now he was aware of the way that his face ached.
Thor, you bastard, did you break my nose?
No, Thor said, drawing the word out in a way that did not make Tony feel confident about his judgment, and Dummy's camera disappeared from sight.
Dummy, I swear to God, I will put tiny, tiny boots on each one of your wheels and make someone pay for the privilege of getting you out of Hawk, and no one will be able to pay your fines.
Tony reached for his nose again, and Thor caught his wrist.
Your nose is not broken, sir,
Jarvis said, unruffled as ever.
I've done a simple scan, and Dr. Banner has confirmed my results. You will recover fully with no adverse effects.
You do, however, look like you've gone 6 rounds with a prize fighter,
Bruce said with a warm smile.
I bet.
Tony glared as Dummy reappeared with an ice pack in his claw.
Hard tangle of illogical circuitry,
he muttered, but he took it.
When did you get here?
He asked Bruce.
Round about the time when you knocked yourself unconscious, and the combined yelling of Jarvis and Thor over the comm unit nearly gave me a heart attack,
Bruce said, his mouth twitching.
I beg your pardon,
Jarvis said, his voice stern.
I was not yelling, Dr. Banner.
Sorry, Jarvis,
Bruce said, smiling.
They were a little concerned, I guess.
Much concerned, Thor said, sounding insulted.
I told you I'd end up getting hurt,
Tony said. And his head hurt, and his face hurt, and Dummy was hiding behind Thor, and Bruce was barefoot as he crouched there, his shirt sleeves rolled to his elbows, and his hair a mess of tangled curls.
Okay,
Tony said, reaching a decision.
We need to get our stories straight. If anyone notices,
Steve is going to notice. Steve is going to notice immediately,
Bruce said, sounding amused, and Tony gave him a slit-eyed look.
If anyone asks what happened,
he repeated,
it was a bar fight.
No one is going to believe that,
Bruce said.
They will if I'm drunk.
Tony stumbled to his feet.
Come on, I need a drink. So bad.